You're listening to Australia's fastest growing podcast network. This is the Lifestyle Pod Network. You're listening to The Dream Show with Jane Theresa Anderson.
Welcome to The Dream Show. I'm Jane Theresa Anderson and this is episode 124. My guest today with a dream is Jason. Now, as you know, if you've been listening to the show for a while, when we have a guest on the show, their dream is a complete surprise. I know absolutely nothing about the dream until it's told to me, because I know that you all love listening to the show that way. And what you'll hear, because we've just finished recording with Jason, is a wonderful movie-like but very entertaining dream, which involves being abducted, coming back down to Earth, and all sorts of wonderful symbols and excitements. It'll have you on the edge of your chair. You'll love this dream. And more importantly, you'll love what we do with the dream, how we interpret it, the conversations we have that link what's happening in the dream to what's happening in Jason's life. And finally, the alchemy that we set to enable Jason to make choices based on what he's understood about himself and his life from his dream to move forward into the kind of the next phase of his life as he would like it to be. There is so much to learn by listening to this conversation. You know, there's ripe with tips on how to approach a dream interpretation, how to approach alchemy exercise. But more than that, I think you'll just be thoroughly entertained with this conversation. Enjoy. But of course, before switching you over to that recording, we have to, I have to, just because I want to, direct you to my websites first. So if you would like to find out more about me and more about dreams and perhaps, you know, investigate not only the free resources at my websites, but also maybe contact me to do some individual dream therapy yourself, or to read some of my paperbacks or ebooks, go to www.dream.net.au, or to my blog www.janetheresa.com, that's Theresa without an H, or go to the podcast website, which has no W's. You're just straight in at thedreamshow.tv, or find me on Facebook. Anyway, for now, put your feet up or walk faster if you're listening to this while you're out for a walk, and enjoy Jason's dream. Welcome to The Dream Show, Jason.
Well, I thank you, Jane Theresa. It's wonderful to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. How's your day been so far?
It's been good. A full day of work. It's cloudy here in Seattle, as it is for about 360 days of the year.
What happens on the other five? Is it sunshine or snow?
Yeah, it's actually quite beautiful. The summers here can't be beat. We don't get too hot. We don't get too cold. It doesn't get too humid, and beautiful mountains to look at.
Oh, that sounds idyllic. That's wonderful. Okay, now, as usual, of course, I have no idea what a dream is. So off you go with yours.
Excellent. So I've got a pretty interesting, I guess everybody's dreams are interesting. This dream was particularly interesting to me. I'd never had one quite like this. It is almost movie-like. I think I could turn this into a TV show. It's got a kind of a beginning and middle and an end. So I'll just launch into it. I wake up in this room, and it's kind of dark in this room. I wake up, I'm naked. I look around, and I'm in my teens. I'm actually 40 years old, but at this point in the dream, I'm in my teens, and I look around the room, and there's other teenagers around. They're not naked, and I stand up and kind of look around and do a little bit of searching, and then I notice there's a big viewing window that looks out towards darkness, and as I look closer and closer, it's a little difficult to see through the viewing glass, but I see that I'm looking into outer space, or I'm looking out at outer space. And the view is just spectacular. I can see galaxies like the Milky Way way off in the distance doing their spiral thing. And it just captures me and almost takes my breath away. And then I kind of get self-conscious about my nakedness. So I grab a white towel and I wrap it around my waist so I don't look too indecent. Then the spacecraft begins to enter the atmosphere of a planet, and I recognize it. I'm like, this is Earth, because I can see city lights down below, and the cities kind of look similar. The landscape looks similar than what I'm used to. And there's a girl standing next to me, and I say, hey, look, it's Earth. I know where we are. And so the next thing I know, the spacecraft descends really quickly, and we're flying at treetop level, and we actually descend below the trees. It almost looks like somewhere here in the northwest. And I tell this girl, it looks like home, and this is really close to our hometown. She must be from my hometown. So I don't know how we get out of the spacecraft, but there's a transition and we're now out of the spacecraft. And the idea is that it's an alien spacecraft, although I never end up really seeing the aliens. So at some point, I guess I had been abducted. So now the girl and I are outside the spacecraft, and in this foresty area, there's this strip mall style of stores. The girl kind of disappears from the dream, and now I'm talking with my mother. And as I'm talking to her, she's happy I'm back, but she's convinced I'm back for good. But I have this feeling, this very strong sense that it's only temporary. And I'm trying to explain to her that these aliens, they have amazing technology. I experienced flying through space in moments, and I was back here at Earth, and they're just going to be able to find me again. And she's in denial and doesn't want to acknowledge that I might disappear again with the aliens. Then the dream shifts gears completely, and I'm at my best friend's house where we grew up as kids. The only person there right now is his brother, Hoff, who is acting kind of weird around me because he's nervous about my alien abduction. And just is being sort of cautious around me. And over a few minutes, he begins to relax, and he asked me about a scar I have on my hand. And he said, hey, didn't that happen while you were playing with my sister, Alexis, when you two were running through the house and you ran from the kitchen to the bathroom? And I said, oh, yeah, I did get a wound, but that's not the same scar. That's a totally different scar than I had from that encounter. And he's like, oh, okay. And so then there's a surprise visit from a good friend of mine who I didn't get to know until later in life. She's German and she's from Germany, so it's kind of odd for her to be in this place. And I'm doing my math homework, and she comes to visit. I really want to spend time with her doing my talking with her, but I have to do my math homework. So a little bit torn there. And then Hoff's dad, Bob, comes home with this little infant. And the infant is not scared of me. He's not nervous of me. But Bob is. So both Hoff and Bob have this hesitancy about me because I've been abducted by the aliens, and they're just not certain if I'm safe or if I'm dangerous. But Bob kind of gets a sense that I'm not dangerous, and so he's not nervous anymore about me being around this little infant. And I notice this infant is walking a little off-kilter. He's just coordination and balance isn't exactly right. And I say something to Bob. Hey, Bob, this little guy doesn't really look like he is very coordinated. And Bob says, yeah, he's not that coordinated, but he gets around just fine. So, okay, that's great. Well, I'm talking to Katharina, my friend, and we're doing our math homework together, and I say to her, hey, I've only got an hour and a half, and I have to be home. And she says, yeah, I need to be somewhere too at 9 p.m. And then I notice I don't even have all the information I need in my math book. And so that's sort of where that segment ends. And then that next thing I know, I'm in a bedroom, except it's not exactly me. It's a third-person perspective, almost like I'm watching a TV show. And there's this boy in a bed, And I think it's this boy is supposed to be mean. And the boy is about 12 years old. His mother and father, this boy had been abducted by aliens. I mean, this boy is essentially me. And this mother, his mother and father have this idea that if they cleanse his blood, then the aliens won't find him. And they're both these parents are doctors. So they're kind of trained in to carry out this procedure of doing a blood cleansing. So against the boy's will, the boy doesn't really fight, but against his will, they kind of bind him up, almost like a mummy. They don't like wrap his face or anything, but they bind him up and they put this pulley contraption so they can raise him off from the bed from horizontal to vertical, and they stretch his arms out. So his arms are vertical, and they slip these white accordion-like sleeves over his arms, and then they begin this blood transfusion. The blood comes up through the hoses, the accordion-style hoses on his arms, and they go through what's like a wound on his bicep. And so they start this procedure, and the boy's trying to explain to them it's not going to work. The aliens are just way too sophisticated. They're way too advanced, and this just isn't something that's going to really have any effect. They're going to find me again, but the parents are convinced they're going to do what they have to do to try and keep their boy safe and not have him get abducted again by the aliens. So now that kind of ends, and I'm in a sort of abandoned warehouse, and there's about 10 people there, and the mood's really just kind of quiet. And everybody kind of has this look of what's going to happen now. The mother and father are there, and the mother and father aren't my real mother and father. They don't look like my real mother and like my mother and father in real life. They're just but they represent my mother and father. So they are there, and a good 7 other people who look to be friends and maybe family. And I look at them. I'm not mad, I'm not bitter, I'm not upset about the whole blood transfusion against my will. I just simply look at them and say, I have to go. I can't stay here. I can't stay the same like you want me to. And I just have to leave. So I walk towards the door of this warehouse, and I walk out the door, and 2 people follow me like they're really sad that I'm leaving. And I look at them, and I'm kind of not wanting them to follow me. So I ask them, which direction are you going? And one of them says, well, we're going to go this way. And I say, oh, good, I'm going to go this other direction. And I turn, and I start walking down the street, and it kind of zooms out like a movie, and I'm third-person perspective again, and I'm walking away. Kind of, I wouldn't say into the sunset, but I'm walking away off onto some journey, and I don't know where I'm going, and I don't know if the aliens are going to come kidnap me again, and I'm not sure what's going to happen to me, but I know I have to go out on this journey. And I remember having a deep sense of sadness in this third person perspective watching me walk away, of just of deep sadness, like I almost wanted to cry. And that's how the dream ended.
Wow, thank you, Jason. That's a huge dream.
Isn't it? It was really long.
Absolutely stunning, yeah. When did you have the dream?
You know, I actually had this back in November, but I've been regularly recording my dreams, so I had it on audio. I wake up in the morning and then I record the dream on audio.
Okay, now that's fantastic. So you were able to re-listen to it before the show today to get all those lovely details.
Exactly.
As you probably know from listening to other shows, the dream does reflect what was happening initially in the 24 to 48 hours before the dream. So, you know, as we go through this process, Jason, think back to, if you can, to November, or at least to the couple of days around before the dream, because what we talk about will be pertinent to then. So I was, you know, my first question was going to be, how did you feel at the end? But you gave me that deep sense of sadness as you're watching from that third person perspective, as if you were going to cry. And yet you had the feeling that the boy that you were watching, which was kind of like you, had this necessity to go on the journey. I have to go on this journey. Can you give me any more about why he felt that he had to go on this journey?
Well, I'll also add that the age seemed to have changed too. So there was the blood transfusion, and the boy was about 12. But in that last scene, he was older, more like 20 or early 20s. And it's almost as if the boy got older as he walked to the door. Why did I have to go? It was sort of a necessity. It was like a calling. Mm. It's almost like it wasn't a choice. It was just something I had to do. And I was continually, I couldn't understand why my parents and my community wanted to keep me there and the way I am. I kind of, it's like I've been changed and I had to go discover myself.
Mm. Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that was the sense that I was getting from the dream. And I'm glad that you used the word calling there. Isn't it interesting when we do have a calling and I'm sure many people listening in will have had, you know, that sense of a calling, or will have read about people having a calling, that although you imagine a calling to be something like, yeah, I know what I want to do, I'm going to go, this is so exciting, this is so wonderful, it's usually more of a sense of, oh no, this is really good, but I'm going to be leaving so much behind. Yes.
Exactly.
Why me? Why did this happen to me? And yet that absolute sense of there is no turning back. I have to do this thing. And so, you know, right at the very end of your dream and throughout the dream, which we'll go into, that's going to be my starting point for getting into your dream with you, is that sense that a couple of days before the dream, you had that sense, whether you were consciously aware of it at the time or whether it was still unconscious and bubbling up, that sense of a calling, a sense of destiny, a sense of something you really had to do, even though to some extent it might have been maybe a feeling of against your will, we're going to go into that, but a sense of a calling. And whenever we have that sense of a calling, by definition, it means that we're going to go off and do something quite different and be in quite a different place to where we are now. And so part and parcel of that means that we have to, no matter how much we try to argue otherwise, we have to leave something behind to be called forth to whatever it is. Necessitates a leaving behind, because you can't go forward as the same person. You know, to a calling is to move from where you are to the place where you are being called to go, and that necessitates a change. So for any change in life, if we're really deeply attuned to it, we're also going to be attuned to the fact that there is going to be some level of sadness, because we're going to have to let go of what has been familiar to us.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like part of you grows, but another part of you, in a way, dies. As you transform and move into a different phase of life.
Yeah, and further down the track, you know that dying is merely, at the end of the day, once you've gone through with it, is a rebirth, and you do have an infant baby in there in the dream, which we'll look at there. And to some extent, for every calling that one has, that there is a not totally unconscious knowledge that this is the case, but, you know, any death, any ending in life does necessitate not only grief, but also some length of time honouring that grief and saying goodbye, you know, that is necessary before moving on. So you've definitely got that feeling there in your dream, and that little infant in there as well. Jason, I'm going to jump about all over the dream, because you know it's not done in a logical straight line.
No, not at all. So feel free, jump away.
Okay. Half and Bob, and then the little infant. Any idea how old the little infant was in the dream?
I would, the infant, toddler age, so I would say anywhere between 18 months and 2 years. Well, probably about 18 months.
Okay. So, and that was a boy?
Yeah.
So he was about 18 months to 2 years. So he had that feeling in the dream of he was walking off kilter. He's coordinated.
Yeah.
And as Bob said, he kind of gets around, but it's still a little bit unco at the moment. So it's most likely that even though this dream reflects some sense of calling and some sense of inevitability of the journey and some sense of necessity to deal with the grief and the letting go and everything around that, there's also the sense that you had already begun this journey for about 18 months, or at least the seed of it had been there. You hadn't actually started really walking the journey because, like the toddler, is not actually really properly on his feet, but there's a sense of something has been sitting there and growing and getting ready. And maybe in November you were already to some extent on that journey, but either you felt that you hadn't really got the kind of the one leg in front of the other quite right yet, or there was an acknowledgement that this is a learning process, and hey, isn't this wonderful that this process of learning to get around until it becomes very fluent, you know, fluid.
Right. And what's interesting, what am I doing? I'm doing my homework, so I'm still learning.
Yes, that's right.
I'm off kilter, but I'm going to keep learning, and I'm going to do my homework.
And you're going to do that homework, even though in the dream you were conflicted. It was like, I really would rather enjoy talking to Katharina, you said. Katharina? Yeah.
Yes.
But I feel I've got to finish my homework first. So there was that conflict there of, as you say, yeah, I'm still doing the learning. I know there's stuff that I need to learn here. But I'd actually also like to be communicating. Now, communicating is more an in-the-moment, spontaneous kind of thing, as you've described it in the dream. Like, I'd like to chat with Katharina. I haven't seen her for a long time. And also, although I'll ask you a specific question about her in a minute, there's been a lot of emphasis on the dream of home and where home is. And all of a sudden, you mentioned that Katharina, well, she's not from home, but she's here. So there's a sense of something that is, even though this is someone I know, something that's not actually familiar and about home or about my upbringing is already in the picture, and I want to be doing that. I want to be in that moment. I want to be communicating, and she's female as well, so maybe it's that creative right brain thing, but you know, and I really want to be doing that, but I do have to do this homework first. So there may be a question there of, do you really need to do the logical maths homework first? You know, do you really need to do as much learning as you possibly can? Or, in fact, is it okay? Is that just a learned thing or a conditioned thing within you? I can't go on this journey till I finish this. I've got to be prepared. Would it actually be okay to kind of stagger off kilter and learn on the job? So there's that question there.
Right. Oh, that kind of says a lot about where I am in life. Wanting to shift vocation and feeling unsteady about doing it and not certain, and I need to learn more.
Without going into a lot more of your dream, and I'm certainly going to do that, I'll just ask you the question at this time. Jason, has that been a theme throughout your life of feeling that I've got to learn this and I've got to study this and I've got to have passed this test before I can whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. A kind of a perfectionist type of personality, and so want to really understand the subject and feel competent before I move into something.
Yeah. If it's interesting, if you think of a little toddler of about 18 months or even of 12 months just beginning to learn to walk, they kind of don't really do their maths homework first.
No, they don't get to, do they?
and they don't care, and they take the bumps and the falls, and they knock their heads and they fall off things. And eventually, well, you know, 99.99% of us actually manage to walk pretty well at the end of all of that.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it? A few bumps on the head, but...
So I quite like that both Harf and Bob you described as hesitant there about your safety or danger. And we've got that picture of the toddler who, to some extent, perhaps isn't aware of safety or danger. He's just off doing his thing, off kilter, but getting around anyway. So, you know, there is that aspect, given that everyone in the dream is reflects something about you. You know, part of the conflict there is that there's a part of yourself which is, in a conditioned way, I guess, hesitant, careful, concerned about safety versus danger. And yet Bob, at that part of the dream, goes through a bit of a shift himself and becomes comfortable about you and ready for you to, connect with the infant. So there is that sense that there's a bit of a shift in that. There's shifts all over your dream, but there's a bit of a shift in that dream where some part of you shifts from being hesitant about safety and danger and actually begins to anticipate, you know, maybe it would be okay to kind of just toddle off and learn it on the job, even though before and after that segment of the dream, it's still okay, back to the maths homework.
Right.
You've got to study. But Katharina, right after that bit, you know, you sort of think, oh, there's a limit on it. I've got an hour and a half and I've got to be home. And she's like, yeah, 9 o'clock and I've got to be somewhere else. So there's that feeling of, what are we going to do with this time? Are we going to totally spend it on the maths homework or are we going to get something from this?
Right. Yeah, that's a really interesting point. Time has always been sort of a thing for me of like, okay, we have to do it in exactly this amount of time and then it has to be done.
Yeah. And I bet you always achieve that though.
Yeah, typically, or you know, the quality is suspect, but you get it done one way or another.
That's good. Just after, I took a couple of notes while you were telling the dream, and just after the segment where Katharina said, oh, and at 9 o'clock I have to be somewhere, I've written that you said, I don't have all the information I need. So can you remind me of that bit of the dream, what that was about?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was for finishing the homework. I discovered that I didn't quite have all the information from the book that I needed in order to complete the homework.
All right.
So, yeah.
Okay, so there's that. So that endorses again that feeling of I've got to get it all right, the perfectionist, and there's that sense of perhaps one never, not perhaps, in my humble opinion, we never ever have all the information we need.
I think I finally am coming around to that. It's taking a while, but I'm catching on.
I mean, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's really important to prepare ourselves for whatever it is we are, but then we've got to take that step from, I've got enough information now, and in any case, all information is suspect, especially if you've got a calling, because a calling implies I'm going somewhere new, particularly in your dream, and maybe there's not a lot of information available to you. Maybe you're pioneering here, you know? So yes. There's a question. I want to move off of this section of the dream, but I do just want to ask one last question, Jason. What three words would you use to describe Katharina's personality or approach to life?
Her personality is outgoing and sociable and adventurous.
Okay, lovely. So we particularly got adventurous there.
Yeah.
As well as outgoing, which, you know, literally, if you look at the word, actually means I'm going out away from home.
Yeah,
I'm going on a journey. Yeah. So these, even though Katharina is someone you know, that the first three words that occur to you to describe a person's personality or approach to life does relate to what's going on for you. So here she is in the dream, a symbol of adventurous, of outgoing, and sociable as well. So she's there as you're conflicted between getting all the information, which you probably never can, and passing the test with your maths and being absolutely and completely and absolutely ready and wanting to communicate with the part of yourself that is more of an adventurer and is more ready to just go out and do it anyway, and is particularly kind of exotic because you said in the dream, oh, she's at home. She's doesn't belong at home, but she's here.
Yes, exactly. So it's a little bit of that foreign element at home.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go right more towards the beginning of the dream and pick up that wonderful observation that you made there when you said it's a foreign element at home. So Germany is kind of like a bit foreign. Outer space is very, very foreign.
Yes.
Yeah. aliens may be even more foreign than the concept of outer space.
Absolutely.
So we've got way, way out, exotic, foreign, very far from home kind of feeling here, which I'll come into in just a second. And I love as you were telling the dream, and you know, there was this wonderful feeling of we're all with you in the room in this dream, and all of a sudden you're talking about landing the spaceship, and we go, oh, you're in a spaceship. You know, we thought you were in the room looking at outer space, and all of a sudden you're describing you're in the spaceship coming to Earth. Was that the point in the dream where you suddenly realized you were in a spaceship too?
I think so. I think at first it was just as if I was in this room kind of floating around in outer space, and then when the scene changed so abruptly, it became clear that, oh, we're moving. We're not just standing somewhere in outer space. We're in this craft that now is taking me back to Earth.
Oh, that's fantastic. And although there are, you know, although what I'm going to say may seem like one interpretation, there are actually many levels of interpretation. So I'm just jumping in at that word craft, because often dreams will play with, do a bit of wordplay as well. And I'm associating craft with a calling, not as in an arty craft. I mean craft as in a skill or a talent that we have. And the reason I'm jumping on that is because you had that, the way that you described that there, Jason, you said it's like, oh, I thought I was just kind of out in outer space floating along. It's like, whoa, I'm doing nothing here. I'm just floating along. And all of a sudden, I realize that's not the case. I'm actually in a vehicle and I'm going somewhere. Right. So it shifts. There's kind of almost two opposites there, from way out of space and just observing and just floating along, a kind of being in a way, maybe, to actually maybe not driving the craft yourself, but actually, you know, being driven. A kind of motivation coming in, and that sense of a craft as well, because you could have said spaceship, space rocket, any kind of thing, but you said spacecraft, so your unconscious is kind of going, craft, look at that word, craft. So it's that sense in the couple of days before the dream, you probably had a sense of, I've kind of been exploring the outer limits of myself, you know, very far from home, very unfamiliar, very adventurous, but I've kind of been in a state of just floating along with a state of being, and all of a sudden, in the couple of days before the dream, I suddenly had a feeling of something's shifting, something's moving. Hey, it's me! And we're going somewhere. I'm not sure how I feel about this, but I'm being driven. And there is purpose, yeah. So my feeling there, particularly with the craft, is that you were beginning to feel, even though it had been kind of happening for about 18 months, you're beginning to feel a connection with the calling that has eventuated at that time and knowing how to do it. But at that sense, at the beginning of the dream, although it was a calling, you were kind of going there without, like, a little bit against your will, like someone else is driving me. This is exciting. I'm not actually doing it myself. I wonder where we're going.
Yeah. And not knowing where the destination is, and having a sense of, where the heck is this leading to?
That's right. And there's the same, similar kind of the shades of that feeling at the end of the dream, but there's more of a sense of purpose. You know, at the end of the dream, you've also got, I'm on this journey, I'm going somewhere, I don't know where it's going, I don't know where it's leading. I feel a bit, I feel a little bit shaky enough about it that you're actually in third person perspective watching yourself at the end of the dream. It's like, I'm not completely in touch with this, but there is the sense that the boy, you, is doing the walking and making the decision, whereas in the earlier part of the dream, you're being driven and not sure about it. At the beginning of the dream, right at the beginning, Jason, it's like, I wake up in a dark room, and I went, fantastic, that's brilliant. because to wake up in a dream, you know, everything is personal to the dream, but you've got that sense of, okay, there's an awakening to something here. I'm waking up to something that I haven't seen before, and I'm waking up in a dark room. So it's like, okay, this is something I haven't seen before. It's probably really unconscious, and I'm waking up to it. So, you know, that told me straight away that you were probably about to discover something quite wonderful and do some kind of great, even paradigm shift in this dream. And one of the first thing you notice is that you're naked, so it's got that feeling of vulnerability, I guess, about it. And you were in your teens, and there were other teenagers around you. So when you say in your teens, what kind of age jumps to mind without thinking about it?
15.
About 15. So if we go, you're now 40, this will probably either connect at this time of the dream either to when you were 15 or 15 years ago, mm-hmm. which would be when you were
25.
And at the end of the dream, you're in your 20s as you walk away as well. My sense is it's probably back to when you were 15. So what was happening? Well, probably like most teenagers of the 15, you were feeling pretty vulnerable, weren't you?
Oh, yeah. Going through all those transitions of teenagehood and entering into American high school. So when you're 15, you're the low end of the totem pole and trying to figure out the cliques and the pecking orders and trying to figure out girls.
And how did you go with that when you actually got to high school? Did you connect easily, or what happened?
I connected pretty easily. I had a good group of friends, and I was active in sports, so I was able to connect with people that way. Sociable person myself, so it wasn't too hard integrating. I had one or two bumps with the older classmen. My puberty went really fast, so I when I was 15, I looked like I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
So I think I was pushing the buttons on some of the older kids, wanting to posture themselves a little bit.
So a sense of being ahead of your time.
A little bit, yeah.
Which is, I don't know if this is the right track, but can be what the sense of a calling gives you. Not what a sense of calling gives you, but when you accept a calling, one of the vulnerabilities that you have to face is that sense of being a pioneer, is of other people's, the feeling of being ahead of your time.
Yeah, absolutely, which is clearly a vulnerable space.
It's naturally vulnerable, and part of the task is working out a way to deal with that, or a solution for that. So that, and in the dream, you had the solution. You white towel, easily done. Nice. Particularly given what you just said, then it actually covered the area of your body, which particularly probably showed your advanced state.
Yeah. Exactly. And,
yeah.
No longer vulnerable.
No longer vulnerable. That's right. And at the moment of being no longer vulnerable, the very next thing that happened in the dream was that you realized you were in the spacecraft and you recognized Earth down below.
Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly. The like city lights and where we were coming into the Earth's atmosphere was kind of nighttime, and so I could see the city lights and get a rough sense of the pattern of the globe and realize, whoa. That's Earth.
That's fantastic. And that gave you, and what feeling did you get apart from the whoa, that's Earth? What feeling did the anticipation of landing on Earth give you? Can you remember in the dream?
It was a bit exhilarating to have gone from outer space down to Earth so fast. And there was a sense of excitement to be coming back to my home planet, back home.
Wonderful. So it's that sense of being back home, is there a sense of grounding in there as well, or is the exhilaration too high for a sense of grounding?
Yeah, it was a bit too high for a sense of grounding. It was more a buzz with news of what I wanted to go share, like with my mother or with friends. So I was excited to go reconnect with people and share with them my big adventure.
Okay, that's fantastic. So there's that sense that you've been out beyond what is familiar, way beyond what is familiar, and the moment that you deal with your vulnerability in the dream, you've got exciting things to share with everybody. And you particularly used the word adventure there. So there's that sense at the beginning of the dream that I have something to share, something to connect, something to give, and I'm really excited about being able to bring what I have learned to other people or to whatever,
right?
Which is part of the calling thing too. I've been out somewhere and I've got something, and I can't wait to share this.
To share and spread what I've learned.
Yes, that's right. Which is really lovely, and that's why as you're coming back down, you now realize you're in the space capsule that the girl is with you, and you say, "Hey, look, it's Earth. You know, this is where we're going." There's that sense, just before we go any further, Jason, of that it wasn't a voluntary journey. There was that sense of, as you said, I think I was abducted by aliens. You didn't meet them, you didn't see them, but there was that sense of abduction. So even though you were coming back home, and I love that you said it was a really fast process, because that's like you just described your puberty changes the same way. It's very fast.
Yeah, that's true.
Which might be why whatever was happening for you at the time of this dream in November around this calling feeling resonated with that same feeling of the rapid change that you went through when you were 15 and how you dealt with that, with the vulnerability and with other things as well. And, you know, also at a deeper level, just going, okay, suddenly I've got access to a level of wisdom or understanding, you know, that because that's the kind of the growth to adulthood reflected in whatever's happening to you now. I've gone out there, I've got a really fast development, wonderful things have happened, and I'm bringing them back to earth. But there's that sense that it wasn't a voluntary journey, that sense that you were abducted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's almost a feeling there of you didn't really choose to go out and discover new things. There was a situation in your life, and maybe that was 18 months ago, you know, like as old as a little infant in your dream. About 18 months, or you described him as 18 months to 2 years ago. So there may have been a situation 18 months to 2 years prior to the November where something happened that involuntarily abducted you from the safety of your home to suddenly finding yourself in outer space.
Yeah. Nothing's coming to mind right away, but possible.
It may come later. So there's the feeling that you... calling that you have got has come from a place that you didn't initially voluntarily choose. You were in some kind of situation and all of a sudden you realized that it was exciting and fast, but there was still that sense that I didn't choose it myself. I was abducted by aliens. So there may also be that feeling of, you know, alien is something so foreign that I can't really understand it at all, but I know that it exists. So some aspect of yourself or aspect of your understanding or experience of life that was so out there compared to everything that you've had that it felt alien to you, and you may even have felt alienated to some extent from your everyday life by this situation or experience that you had or place that you found yourself in.
I can divulge a little bit if you care.
Yes, that'd be great. I'm still going to enjoy the rest of your dream, but we'd all love to.
I'm going to school right now in a program called Depth Psychology, but my profession is an engineer. So very two different mindsets. And so when I go to school and I learn about this really interesting psychological world, and then I go back to this engineering world, it's abrupt and it's they're like two foreign entities that don't speak well with each other.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense. And I love that feeling of depth psychology because, you know, what you're doing in depth psychology is plumbing the very depths of the person, you know, the depths of the unconscious or whatever terminology you are learning in depth psychology. You're essentially plumbing the deep inner universe. And so to kind of see the outer universe in your dream, it's almost like seeing the big picture. You know, you can't get much deeper reflection of the inner self than the furthest reaches of outer space. Well, at least the Milky Way in your dream anyway.
Yeah.
And I love also that with the many levels of dreaming, you've got that, well, the engineering, perhaps that's a little bit also like doing the maths homework, as you've described it.
Yeah, definitely that other side of the brain getting very technical and analytical.
Yes, whereas the Katharina part, you know, the wanting to, in the dream, the conflict between doing the maths homework and being with Katharina, the exotic Katharina is perhaps more the depth psychology.
Yeah, that could be the sort of yin to the yang.
Mm. So coming back to the yin to the yang, thank you for that. That makes it beginning to make a lot of sense. You've got the girl in the dream saying, and you're saying to her, hey, look, it's Earth. So there's a sense that you, this unknown girl is a female, you know, the right brain or the creative self, or maybe the depth psychology, because you've just described it as requiring the complete opposite from the engineering part of your brain. So we can say, just using another terminology, we can say let's call engineering left brain, even though you and I both know that it's not totally, but you know, let's just right. Put it there, and because you've called it analytical, and then let's put the depth psychology because the way you've painted the picture of it in your discussion today is not analytical, is requiring a different kind of outlook as the right brain or the girl in the dreams. There's a sense of I'm coming back home and I'm now informing the creative or the intuitive part of myself, the girl, hey, look, we're coming home. So you connected with that, you know, that female or that depth psychology part of yourself, and you're bringing it back to earth.
Wow, yeah, that's really interesting to think. I just kind of try and flash back to November and where I was, and I think I was beginning to integrate and introduce material that I was learning through my program into work, and I was trying to integrate the two.
That's absolutely fantastic. And you know, and when you can get that rare opportunity to bring both sides of the brain, the analytical and the intuitive, together, you're in a very, 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 very powerful and wise place. So was there a sense, even though you chose to do the depth psychology course, the dreams got that sense of, I was kind of abducted by it. Did it turn out to be something that you weren't expecting? Did it kind of grab you by surprise and abduct you?
Oh, completely. Mm. Yeah. Going through a sort of transformational phase of life, and I was just exposed to it. Some friends told me about it, and I looked into it, and I just followed sort of this instinct and went with it. It was one of those, I have to do this. Mm. I can't not do this program.
Fantastic. So your sense of calling was right at the beginning of the depth psychology program, based on what people said to you, but before you realized it was actually going to abduct you and take you a long way from here.
yeah, exactly.
And then things moved very, very fast, and you began to bring it back to earth and began to contemplate how to integrate the two, which you then started to do at work at the time of this dream, even though people would have been a little bit cautious, or you would also have been cautious about how this is going to go, and you still had that sense of not just the engineering, but that sense of I've got to get all the information, because that's been part of my upbringing, that I'm conditioned that you can't really walk off into unknown territory unless you have all the information with you.
right.
There's a lot more in your dream, like that scar on your hand. I won't be going into all of it because we've kind of covered the basics and about to tie it all together. But that scar on the hand with Alexis, was that actually something that actually happened in your waking life?
No. Not at all. I didn't have that much interaction with Alexis when I was younger. I was spending a lot more time with her brother, who wasn't in the dream, my best friend, Ty. So, no, I never really had that experience and got injured with Alexis. Mm-hmm. That was kind of fabricated by the dream.
So, therefore, very important. So even though you didn't have much connection with Alexis, you will have a formed opinion of her or a view of her because she was in your dream. So speaking to you, thinking about her as you remembered her, what three words would you give for Alexis for her personality or approach to life?
Oh, this is kind of interesting. More sort of cautious and reserved. A little bit reserved, cautious, and kind of logical.
Okay, well, there you go then, hey?
Yeah, I know.
It's wonderful. So that part of the dream was like reference to a scar on the hand. So with your hands, I guess the hands are how we handle life or what we're doing, you know, and there's a reference to an injury there. So, you know, to some extent, I don't know, something around logical and cautious and what you're prepared to handle and what's hurt you in the past. But in that part of the dream, you go, no, it's kind of unimportant. But so there may have been a feeling, I don't know, maybe way back in your childhood where you learned caution and learned the reverence of logicality through some kind of hurting to your hand, maybe a physical pain, but going out and handling something and doing it yourself and learning from that. No. You didn't have enough information.
Right. Yeah. When I think back, I was tentative about working with my hands and doing craft type work of being the perfectionist, I didn't want to get it wrong. So I read the instructions very thoroughly. And I did it by the letter.
Can you remember, is there any part of you that can remember as far back as possible any incident as a very young child where you did go and do something crafty with your hands and it didn't go too well?
Well, I wasn't injured, but I do remember when I must have been probably 8 or 9, and I was in Cub Scouts. We build these little race cars out of a block of balsa wood, and I remember just feeling very uncertain about how to go about doing it, and I ended up having a friend of my mother's helped me create it, and he basically shaved it down and sanded it all for me because I was just beside myself with, where do I start?
Jason, I love that you have this calling to take you over to the intuitive. Let's just do it. Craft. The space craft. Yes. I love it. That's so lovely. It's just so gorgeous. So we go through the dream, and towards the end, you are in the bedroom at some stage and you've got that third person perspective. I'm going to rush through this bit a little bit because we've really covered it, but just for you and for anyone listening in, any time in a dream you shift from into the third person perspective, you know, you're looking in, you're the objective onlooker in the dream, it's often because you don't want to actually go in and feel the pain or feel the emotion. You kind of distance yourself from something. And there could be a connection there at yet another level of meaning, you know, with the feeling of aliens at the beginning of the dream, you know, to be so alien to something that it's foreign to you. So in a sense, you can look at or feel an emotion or feel something and need to jump out of that or alienate yourself from an emotional feeling because it's too painful. You know, that doesn't belong to me. And I think at some stage in your dream, you said your mum was in denial about something. So because everyone's a bit of an aspect of yourself, there may be in part of your readiness to accept this calling, a kind of struggle or a tussle with being in denial about accepting the adventure and the emotional hurts and the vulnerabilities and the prospects of doing stuff without all the information and not doing it perfectly and just kind of staggering along a bit and all of that stuff, of actually stepping into that and feeling okay about that rather than kind of alienating it from yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Certainly a bit of it's interesting how you catch the fact that my mother was in denial and that there's not wanting to exactly recognize that I'm being abducted and taken on this journey. Mm. Sometimes I have a problem relating the dream figures to myself. So I get very logical about it, that that's another person. But then when I step back and now that you just presented me with it, then yeah, there's absolutely a part of me that's, maybe a little bit in denial and doesn't want to be abducted.
Yeah, and it is very hard to do that thing of stepping away, particularly when it's people we know in the dream. But and particularly like the mother, you know, ideally the mother is the part of ourself that births us and nurtures us, and then ideally the toughest job for all mothers to do is to then let you go and do your thing. So you've got that sense of the part of yourself that has nurtured you and should now be ready to let you go and do your thing, but is in denial over that aspect. So yeah, there's a lot of different layers there, and everything that you just said too was absolutely spot on. I like that you saw the aliens as like, it's like no matter how many times you cleanse my blood, those aliens, they're too sophisticated and too advanced, they're gonna get me.
It's like, there's no chance.
No chance. So, hey, you know, you called, boy. There ain't nothing you can do about it. You've seen the other side. And no, it's a lovely endorsement, that feeling that, you know, a dream is a snapshot of everything about who you are at the time of the dream. And certainly at that time of the dream, your evaluation of that more intuitive side and perhaps the depth psychology and things around that was It is sophisticated. It is advanced. I am sophisticated. I am advanced. I can do that. I'm attracted to that. And there ain't no going back. There's nothing I can do. You know, my life has just been so changed by what I have learned and experienced there that if I wanted to go back, I can't. And that's where you really come to that last segment of the dream, where you're in the abandoned warehouse. And again, there may be a play on words on the warehouse being a place where one is aware, simply because your dream started with a waking up in the dark. And it's an abandoned warehouse. It's maybe a part of yourself that you abandoned before, or a sense of being abandoned, which one can get when one leaves the home and goes on a mission of calling. You know, you may have a sense that you're abandoning, and I guess it's more that, abandoning everything that you have known up until now. And therefore, that is the place. There's a new awareness of abandonment. I think that's it. And that abandonment is around, you know, the sadness, the feeling I have, the awareness is I have to go, I can't stay here. I can't, and you said, I wrote down here, I can't stay the same like you want me to. Which many children, when they reach a point of wisdom, might say to a parent that has a different judgments of where the expectations of where the child goes, but is what we also say to the part of ourselves which we've grown beyond. I can't stay the same like you want me to, where things will be safe and familiar. I have to go. I'm abandoning to some extent. This is the deepest feeling in your dream. I feel like I'm abandoning everything I was, and I've got to allow some sadness and grief around that. And then you go to this third person perspective and you see yourself walking down the road now in your 20s, the deep sense of sadness. And I guess also, Jason, because the dream doesn't say what is right or wrong, if there was ever such a thing anyway, the dream doesn't guide or suggest that you do this or that. The dream is a snapshot, albeit an absolutely fantastic experiential snapshot of where you are now, and then you could, or where you were in November, and then you can look at that snapshot and say, yeah, like that bit, don't like that bit, whatever, make changes, don't, whatever. There's that sense of the dream of an awareness of grief for letting go, and then you have the choice about how much of your past way of being you want to let go, whether you want to go totally in the new, because your dream shows a readiness for that if you want to just go through the grief and the sadness. But of course, there's also that sense of abandonment in your dream, the abandoned warehouse. So you also have the choice, if you wish, to work out a way of taking some of that with you. Not perhaps that sense of how you used to be, but I guess you would know this better than I, but I'm thinking of things like the lessons I learned from that, some of the precious treasured things that I can take forward with me. I don't know. What do you think?
No, it absolutely resonates. Trying to craft a new vocation for myself makes me step back and realize, well, I can't just leave everything that I've learned behind. It's impossible. It's integrated in me. I study mechanical engineering, and I've worked as an aerospace engineer, and just, I can't, that will be a part of me as I move on into a different vocation that will somehow involve depth psychology. And it's a matter of, well, what does that look like? And I don't know, that's the journey I guess I'm walking out into.
And I love the feeling that you're, at the end of the dream, it's the unknown journey, but although you have the sadness, you still feel comfortable about that sense of the unknown.
Yeah, really comfortable. I mean, sitting here right now, I'm kind of scared, really. It's like, what am I doing? Where am I going into with this lifestyle, life vocation change? But in the dream, yeah, I was absolutely comfortable with it and resolved that this was just something I have to go do.
Yeah. In your depth psychology, do you do exercises around dialogues?
Dialogues with... What do you mean when you say dialogues?
So the answer's no. I'm working out one of many possible dream alchemy exercises to give you, because I was about to ask you the question. What I'm picking up from what you're saying is that you have the commitment, you're going to go forward in some way into a sense of the unknown, to use depth psychology in some way in your life, but you would prefer, if you can, to blend it with some of the the engineering aspects or some of that analytical aspects or something that you want to take forward with you. Is that correct?
To a degree. I guess I have this knowledge and sort of expertise in this one world, and there must be a way I can leverage that, like working with engineers or working with people who are in technical professions, not necessarily doing that sort of work myself, but just having the knowledge that I can speak with them at that level and I can relate to them at that level, but with this other knowledge.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay, so what I was going to suggest then is a dialogue. I'll explain it to you and then we can fine-tune it before. What a dialogue is when you pick either one symbol or one person or two symbols from a dream, and you allow yourself 10 minutes, maximum 15, no more. You put a clock on and you go so fast that you do not allow that logical perfectionist brain to even edit or think at all. It's like this is stream of consciousness stuff. And either on a piece of paper or on a keyboard, you dialogue between the two things. So I'll give you an example right now as I'm sitting here. It will be silly because they're always silly, and I'm just doing this off the top of my head. In front of me is a candle. Outside, it is just starting to rain. So I'm going to do a dialogue between candle and rain just off the top of my head. Okay, I'm going to start with the candle saying, my flame's just gone out. So the rain says, yeah, I know it's raining. Can't you see that? The candle says, but I was enjoying having my flame here. The candle says, yeah, but I had to rain. The candle, but I was having a wonderful day. Yes, but, you know, there's black clouds and we have to, blah, 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 blah. Silly stuff. Sentence around. So with a dialogue, you give an initial sentence or question, and then later on, you know, shortly after we finish this recording, you sit down and you allow 10 or 15 minutes and you dialogue between these two things, and you go so fast that it's stupid. You may get elements of repetition like I just showed you there too, but if you get repetition, just go with it until one of the symbols breaks away and starts to introduce a new subject. Now, because you're doing it fast, what you're doing is engaging your unconscious mind in having a conversation, and often there are two aspects to a dialogue. One is that as the two symbols communicate, at least one of them reveals more about itself, because it's your unconscious mind using the same symbol from the dream but being forced to do stream of consciousness talking about it, and that can be enlightening in itself. But more importantly, what you'll often get from a dialogue is at least the beginning of an integration, which is what you said you'd like to achieve. So in my silly example, the candle and the rain might come to some sense of integration. You know, the candle might move indoors while you rain or whatever, I don't know, but they come to an agreement. And because these are symbols from your dream, what you're doing at a deep unconscious level is getting two conflicting or divergent aspects of yourself to integrate in a way which is helpful to you. So that was the process I was going to suggest, except that I was going to take it slightly out of the dream symbolism because it will still work, and have you an engineer dialogue with a depth psychologist.
Wow, that would be interesting.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it?
No, I love the idea. That sounds great.
Okay, so don't start to think about it now, because when you do it, just plunge in. But do just take a pen and jot down the opening sentence, which is going to be from the engineer. And the engineer is going to say, depth, what's deep about outer space?
All right. What's deep about outer space?
Now, I know that sounds a bit weird, but it's what comes to me as the ideal way to seed the... All right. So you won't have your engineer brain on when you do this, remember? You'll just have your... I'm out there in the unknown.
Yeah. Take brain off.
That's right. and just let it flow and see what happens. And then with all your experience as a depth psychologist and your analytical experience as an engineer, you will be able to sit back and look at that dialogue and more deeply understand the different aspects of the conflict and more deeply understand how to integrate. And it's likely that within a few days, maybe a week, that at a much deeper level than that, unconscious stuff will begin to integrate and bubble up, and you'll wake up with, I've got an idea. I can see how I can put these things together.
I love it.
Yeah.
That sounds really lovely. I can't wait to start.
Okay. Well, go away and do it now. Thank you so much for sharing your dream. Did you have any other questions before we go?
No. I mean, we've covered a lot of the dream, and I felt like you gave me some new insights around some of the dream figures and the dream symbols. And I also thought, I feel like it, the way you've amplified it and interpreted it really seemed to fit with my life. So
that's really wonderful. So thank you so much for sharing your dream. And what we've done, as you've said there, is relate the dream to your waking life at the time and your waking life now. And you've been able to get from that some tools and ways to integrate some of those conflicts and find your way to go on your inevitable calling. So I wish you so well with your calling, and do let me know how it goes. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Jane Teresa.
I just love having a guest on the show. It's 124 episodes, and I just thoroughly enjoy them, and I hope you do too. As you know by listening to the show, we only edit if something like a dog barks too loud, or a garbage truck rolls by too loud, or something like that. You get what happens as it happens, and most of you tell us you enjoy it that way. So it makes for a longer show, but I think you get all the intricacies, and you get to be a part of the journey as it really happens. Thank you for listening to another show. If you enjoyed this, don't keep it to yourself. Spread it around. Remember, the show is on iTunes. So, let as many people know as possible. Share it on Facebook. Share it on your social media. Actually, tell real people about it and give them the link. And let other people enjoy the show and learning more about dreams and how to improve their lives in the way that you are by listening to the show as well. Our next episode, episode 125, is due out in 4 weeks, which is the 4th of May 2012. Although, of course, you could be listening to this anytime. As I record this, the next show, episode 125, is due out in 4 weeks on the 4th of May. Have a wonderful month. Thank you for listening. I'm Jane Teresa Anderson.
The Dream Show is a production of Jane Teresa Anderson for the Lifestyle Pod Network. You can find more great podcasts like this one at lifestylepodnetwork.com.